Hello, and welcome to OMP Talks, a podcast about supply chain planning challenges, ways to solve them, and the people behind the technology.
Hi, my name is Flo, Senior Business Development Consultant here at OMP, and your host for this session. And today I'm here with Bob Herzog. Bob was a Senior Director of Planning at P&G, who recently retired. And today we're going to dive a little bit deeper into what the main challenges are of leaders, business leaders, in the consumer goods industry. Welcome, Bob. Thank you for joining us here today. Yeah, thank you for being here, for making a trip. How is retirement treating you so far?
Well, let me start by saying I highly recommend retirement at the right time.
Okay.
So retirement is great. So for me, I have the opportunity to manage my time a little more closely and to pick and choose how I spend it. And it's been a great opportunity to give back to the community, which is something that I feel really driven to do and blessed to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. If it's okay with you, I'll start on the topic of today. If you would have to name three main challenges for consumer goods leaders, what would you say those are?
Well, I think the first one is the world that we live in is continuing to change, and it feels like it's changing faster than ever. There's a lot of disruptions that are happening in the supply chain. And the supply chain has fundamentally changed during the COVID period. During COVID, we saw a shift where people weren't going out to eat as much, weren't going out of the house as much, couldn't go out of the house as much. And so for consumer products companies, we saw consumers shift their consumption more to e-commerce and online. We also saw a shift in spending patterns towards buying things to make their environments comfortable, since they couldn't go to the movies or dinner or social kind of activities, bring that into the household. So there's a fundamental shift in some cases away from big box kind of retailers towards online. That's one. But the second one is, it seems like there are more and more disruptions happening. You know, we see obviously the conflict with Russia and Ukraine has had some very unfortunate and significant impacts on the supply chain. We see inflation is significant and has not yet abated, although the monetary policy around the world is working on it. And we see a lot of challenges with labor. So things that are labor intensive, whether it's transportation, whether it's warehousing, whether it's parts of manufacturing, there is a renewed interest and pressure to be able to automate, to reduce some of the dependencies that are there from a labor standpoint. And the technology, both from a physical standpoint and from an information standpoint, have evolved to a place where that automation is much more affordable than it used to be. I think the other one that I really think about is there are changes in the talent market.
Okay.
So if I think about 10 years ago versus today, there have been such significant advances in technology and what I would call capabilities that are easily accessible by our employees and even being taught in school. You know, as an example, a good friend of mine has a daughter who's a ninth grader. And one of the projects that they're working on, or actually just finished up before the school year finished, was doing programming of physical robots.
Really?
Right? As an eighth grader.
That's
right?
Amazing.
So as someone who is early in their teenage years. And if I think about technology from a data and information standpoint, we've really seen over the last few years the rise of popularity of machine learning, which is coming much more into the forefront. You hear about ChatGPT all the time. I think whoever really gets a hold of that and figures out how to use artificial intelligence will make some, productively will make some big gains. But we see the tools necessary to extract data from systems, to visualize data, to transform data into information have really changed a lot. And so the expectations of our employees have changed a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if we think about the ecosystem we're in, environment, climate change, sustainability, disruptions, all of these things are becoming much more relevant to our customers, consumers, and shareholders. Talent seems scarce. Folks are working on talent shortages, and we need to do different things in our supply chains to be able to manage the challenges of today, as well as to prepare ourselves for the challenges of tomorrow.
Yeah, the future, indeed. So you mentioned a couple of challenges. They're very broad. If you would have to give these business leaders some piece of advice, how can they face these challenges? What are drivers for success to actually go about these challenges?
Well, I think the first thing is one of the key roles of a business leader is to, in my opinion, to work to define with the organization the choices around where to play from a business standpoint and how to win, what those strategies are going mm-hmm. to be. So getting really clear on what a winning strategy looks like in the organization so that the organization can win in the marketplace. And then importantly, working to make sure that that strategy is alive at every level in the organization, right? And so, one of the things that I think about is, a person who's a general manager running a business, he or she with their team puts together a plan that says, this is how we're going to win. And then I think around about executional excellence in the operation. And I think about the, front line, the planner, the person in the warehouse, the person driving the truck or whatever, if they get overwhelmed and busy just trying to keep products moving, you say, boy, what are the odds that that strategy is going, the decisions they make are going to be in line with the strategy? And a big company can have hundreds of thousands of decisions a day. And if those decisions are €1 or €2 or $1 or $2 cheaper per decision, and you think about how that compounds over the course of time, it becomes huge.
Of course, yeah.
Right? And so you say, how do you bring these strategies to life? Well, one way is to have scorecards and reward systems that are not looking at the individual nodes of the supply chain or the silos, mm-hmm. but are really looking end-to-end across the enterprise. So as an example, if I think about manufacturing and I dial the clock back a few years, from a plant manager standpoint, if the reward system is looking at manufacturing operating expense, that says how much product was produced and what is the cost of that product. And that's what we're trying to optimize. In that situation, what we would like is long runs, very few changeovers, no changeovers would be even better, right? And we could really optimize the amount of production we can get out of our production assets. Well, the challenge with that is, call it an ideal state, more ideal state end-to-end in the supply chain, is that the supply chain can make today what the consumer offtake is in consumer products. And so what that would drive us to is we would want to have low dose, small batch, frequent runs, and very frequent deliveries so that we don't have to have inventory carrying Indeed. Costs, so that we don't have things that expire, so that we don't have these overage costs, so that we don't have the handling costs. Inventory has a lot of hidden cost with it. So there's a fundamental difference around what are we trying to optimize? Is it the end-to-end supply chain to deliver value to the customers, consumers, and shareholders? Or are we still at a place in our supply chain where we're optimizing the silos inside the supply chain, but sub-optimizing the total? I would say in the world that we're in today, many of the supply chain leaders understand very well the physical supply chain. Mm-hmm. They can describe, where our manufacturing sites are, where our products come from, where our suppliers are, how they get to market, and describe that, in a good level of detail. But if you ask folks to describe the information supply chain that says when a consumer goes to the store and buys one of our products, how does that translate into a signal, into a demand signal that ultimately comes back and informs the supply chain on what to order, how much, where does it need to be shipped, how and when does it need to be translated into finished product, and where does it need to be distributed? The level of sophistication of understanding the information supply chain, which really controls the flow and performance of the physical supply chain Indeed. Is not as mature as the physical supply chain understanding. So, having an end-to-end process, reward system, scorecard that brings these operating strategies to life, looking end-to-end versus looking at individual silos, and then really engaging the talent that we have in our organizations so that they can be part of the solution and success with all these decisions mm-hmm. that get made, so they're more in line with our how-to-win choices, can help our businesses be more successful, particularly as competition is more fierce than ever.
Of course, yeah. And how did P&G go about the information supply chain? What did they do? Because I know that they brought in OMP. How did that come into play? And what was the key role of OMP in that information supply chain?
That's a great question, Flo. One of the things that OMP does really, really well is in the starting in the scheduling kind of area. Mm-hmm. OMP has very sophisticated and mature optimization capabilities through the mixed integer linear programming. And so, you know, P&G has turned to OMP as our supply chains, OMP has worked with P&G rather, as our supply chains have become more responsive mm-hmm. To be able to support scheduling multiple times per day in these supply chains, which is something that other providers haven't been able to do. The other thing that comes with optimization is the ability to seamlessly embed these business strategies, these how-to-win choices, into the planning systems. So, for example, if we have a manufacturing site, or a source of supply for one of our products, and the demand goes up and we need more, the question could be, you know, is it better to run overtime? Is it better to go to an alternate source? Is it better to expedite trucks? Like, what is the most effective way to handle the change in demand that we're seeing? Well, what OMP does as one of the fundamental capabilities through the optimization work is when the supply chain is modeled into the information systems, all of those choices are put in to the system. So when the solvers in OMP are looking at how do we meet this increased demand, they're automatically considering, you know, I should go this much overtime at this plant, then I should move to a secondary source, and if it gets higher than that, here's what I should do. And so what the planner does is they take a look at, here's the potential options, but those options already consider the business choices. Yeah. So we have a much higher probability of getting to decisions that are going to optimize the top and bottom line outputs that we're looking for, you know, and to deliver better total shareholder return. The other thing that OMP does really, really well that P&G leverages is OMP has a telescopic digital twin architecture, which, boy, that's a mouthful.
Indeed,
right?
Indeed.
And so what does that mean? We have the physical supply chain, you know, so our physical assets, you know, equipment, plants, trucks, warehouses, et cetera. Well, what OMP does is basically takes that physical supply chain and digitally models it. And by doing that, it provides a single source of data, so a single source of truth from a data standpoint. It also provides the ability, as that data is aggregated, to look at it through different lenses, to slice and dice it across time horizons, across different nodes of the supply chain, basically for the stakeholders in the company who are decision makers to be able to get the information they need in the way that they need it. And because the information is in the supply chain, it becomes very easy to answer questions like, hey, the demand has shifted. So it was 100 before, but now it's 100, but the product mix has shifted. What does that mean in terms of our profitability? What does that mean in terms of our inventory plan? What does that mean in terms of our capacity plan? Those questions, the solvers can answer those very quickly. And the what-if scenarios that say, well, instead of going from 100 and having a different mix, what if it's actually 105 and the mix is like this? Well, that can be answered very quickly as well. And so from a business standpoint, when the decisions are around how much of this demand plan, what plan do we want to go with, what do we want to protect against, it's very easy for decision makers to be able to see the cause and effect implications of their choices in ways that they can understand that are business relevant.
Yeah.
So OMP has been a long-term partner of Procter & Gamble, more than 20 years, probably 25, 26, 27 years at this point. There has been a lot of innovation that has happened together between OMP and Procter & Gamble. And one of the things that Procter & Gamble and OMP do very well together is around partnership to say, what are the emerging kinds of challenges that we see? How do we take those business problems? And through OMP's approach with partnering with alliances like EY and Accenture, partnering with other non-compete kinds of companies, partnering with academia, come back and work to provide solutions to those problems jointly with P&G so that P&G can continue to leverage the assets that we have to continue to design the supply chain in a way and then manage and control it in a way that delivers the best possible outcomes, again, for our customers, consumers, and shareholders.
Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe a little bit also about the centralizing of your planning. I heard that P&G went to a more centralized planning together with OMP and the integrated platform that they offered. What was the impact of going to that centralized way of planning?
Well, the centralized planning, I think, that you're referring to is Procter & Gamble had scheduling that was happening and also had distribution requirements planning that was happening as well. There's, you know, one of the innovations that P&G and OMP worked on together, which was called concurrent planning, which is a term that's used much more widely in the industry now. OMP has embedded this in unison planning. But what it is basically the ability for a planner to run the solver, to get the outcomes that they're looking for, and then to see on one screen for the areas that they're planning, where are the places that they're not, the solver wasn't able to fulfill the demand. And that could be because we set a tolerance and said anything, you know, with these products or bigger than the size we want, you know, the planner to have eyes on. Or we have some things that say, you know, in order to solve them, we may need overtime or expedited trucking or different kinds of decisions, and we want human check and intervention on that plan. So what happens today is the planner runs the, you know, runs through the planning scenarios, runs the optimizer, gets an output, sees what the issues are, starts at the highest one, clicks on it, and then their screen opens up and they can see what their production schedule looks like, what the inventory positions in the network are, and can literally drag and drop things to be able to see that problem solved and understand what the impacts are. When they, you know, like what they see, they can accept that change to the plan. It's written back to SAP, and then they go to the next one. What that does is it improves the ability from a customer service standpoint to fulfill what's happening or what the needs are in the marketplace. It provides the kinds of controls that folks want to be able to make some of these decisions if they're, you know, added cost for or whatever. And it also provides the ability to do this very seamlessly and very quickly without saying, these are the issues that I have. Now I need to go set up calls with this plant and this organization. And we're going to do that at 1 o'clock and it's going to take this long. And after that call, we're going to agree what we do and then we're going to go execute it. Instead of having all of that latency and all of that lost productivity opportunity in those discussions, the planner is able to do it on their desktop. And one of the things that I've always said is the most efficient meeting that I can have is when I'm meeting with myself and I'm the decision maker, because then I know that I'm going to get an outcome and I know that all of the parties to the decision are going to agree with it. But that comes from having, you know, clear business choices, clear operating strategies, having the physical supply chain built into the information systems, and then setting the planner up with the skills and capability to be able to manage much more end-to-end than we've historically done.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that, Bob. If you would have to give the supply chain leaders in the consumer goods one piece of advice, one last word you would like to share with them, what would that be?
Well, I think there's actually a couple things. You know, every business has challenges. You know, and those challenges can be cost, cash, service, building skills in the organization, sustainable capability. The piece of advice that I would have would be, you know, beyond this piece around being really clear on the where to play and how to win strategies, it's looking at the physical network and the organization to say, are we set up in our business to be able to deliver with excellence against those strategies? So a good strategy, a winning strategy, brilliantly executed, will deliver success. A great strategy that the business leaders and the organization build, but isn't supported by a supply network design that can deliver against it, or isn't supported by an organization that fully understands what the how to win strategies are trying to do and why they make sense, it makes that operational excellence very difficult. And so, you know, the last mile or the last foot before our products get to our customers and consumers can be the most challenging in the entire supply chain. So looking to, the advice I would give is look to unlock the organization by having scorecards and reward systems that are bringing the outside in, looking end to end, and making sure that the organization understands what those choices are and how they're relevant so that they can be, you know, part of delivering those with excellence every single day.
Thank you so much for that piece of advice and for this very insightful conversation, Bob. And thank you also for joining and tuning in today. I hope this was an insightful conversation. If you want to know more about how OMP can help you future-proof your supply chain, make sure to check out our website, omp.com, and we hope to see you again next time. Thank you.